This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. And on today's show, you're going to get to meet Nolan Bushnell. Nolan is an engineer and an entrepreneur, and you are probably familiar with him because he founded both Atari and the fabulous Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time Theaters chain. If you haven't played an Atari game, you've probably eaten at Chuck E. Cheese. And Nolan is coming up to be a keynote at the iMedia Breakthrough event, and Brad Behrens, one of my big fans, recommended that Nolan come on the show. And of course, I jumped at the opportunity because Nolan is an amazing entrepreneur, having started over 20 different companies. And we're going to talk about some of the newest companies that he's worked on and is working on, Uwink and NeoEdge Networks, which is a gaming company. So let's bring him on the show. Welcome, Nolan.
It's good to be here.
It is good to have you. Thank you so much for doing this quickly so we could get you on the show before you go do your keynote. So why don't you just give our listeners a little history? We're going to spend most of our time talking about the future, but bring us up to the current state of the life of Nolan Bushnell, would you?
Well, I think the touch points are I started out as a kid doing ham radio, which was the only way you could be a geek back then. Then I started actually an advertising company called the Campus Company when I was in college. And to keep me from running around, I took a part-time job nights working at the amusement park. And so it was sell ads during the day, you know, sell balls to knock milk bottles down on nights, and got good at it and was actually promoted to manager. And so while I was pursuing an electrical engineering degree, I was probably the only carny engineer in the country at the time. And I started playing some of the games on the big mainframes and thought to myself, if I could make these cheap and put them in the amusement park, they'd make a lot of money. And, you know, 3 years later after I'd graduated and started in business, I saw it. Cheap computer and went forward to build a video game.
That's kind of that classic entrepreneurial synaptic thing that happens where you take two completely different things, peanut butter and chocolate, and you put them together and they're really fabulous, right?
Precisely. And I said I was in the right places at the right times.
That's a good part of it too, isn't it? I want to ask you a number of questions about the entrepreneurial side. I'll let you finish your story of bringing us up to speed, but I'm kind of bookmarking that with you that I really want to kind of delve into your perspective on being an entrepreneur.
Cool. Okay. After I did Atari, while I was doing Atari, I thought that it would be good to have a place that kids could play my games. Because up to then you could only play in a pool hall or a bowling alley. And so I started Chuck E. Cheese inside Atari. When I sold Atari to Warner, they didn't want to be in the restaurant business, so I bought it back from them and grew the company up to almost 280 restaurants. And then I did a thing called Catalyst Technologies, where we did such companies as ETAC, which
mapping
the foundation and most of the prime patents for automobile navigation. If you've got a map in your car, it's based on ETAC stuff. Then I did a robotics company and a e-commerce company and a video display company and a microwave company and a toy company several others, and then I did the company called Uwink, which think of it as Chuck E. Cheese for adults. It's really a touchscreen at every table. All the ordering is done by touchscreen, and then you can play games. And they're not just games, you know, like you play in your basement or in your bedroom. It's really games for public place consumption. We call it social gameplay.
Yeah, group games, table games.
Group games, all kinds of fun stuff. The idea of games that make you talk more with your friends rather than less. And so we're pretty happy with what we've done. We have one in Mountain View, California, two in Los Angeles, one in Hollywood and Highland, the other one in Woodland Hills. And we are now making our software available to a lot of other people. And we've got installations in McDonald's, we've got installations in Chili's, and we think that the software business is going to be really, really fun. Then I'm chairman of the board of NeoEdge, which is a casual game ad-enabled business, which I'm very excited about. It's a business that really allows casual games to have a new economic model, and I always believe that if you can get some money in something, then everything is better. So it's kind of that that magic sauce that I think will create some very, very interesting product in the future.
All right. We have a lot to cover here. So I want to go back to Uwink, and then I want to also get to NeoEdge. Uwink is super fun. I went recently with my husband and daughter and another and one of her friends from school and his mother. And we had a fantastic time. We liked to play Truth or Dare at the table. It was really a fun time. The kids loved ordering online. And I have to say the staff was exemplary. They took really good care of us. I like the whole thing because it kind of feels like, you know, a pizza place. It's fairly casual, but well designed. And the idea of having conversation around the games, what you said made perfect sense to me. You do talk more with each other. It's like there's a level of intimacy that's created in and doing some of these games together that you don't get in a normal dinner time conversation. Do you think that that is fundamentally a huge opportunity for many restaurants? Do you think that people will love this? Do you think it's going to be like a phase, kind of like we used to have the jukebox right at the tables at our diner and we could choose songs and talk about songs and play songs, kind of that thing?
Well, I think that I never like to say everybody will. I think that our technology will be used in probably 80% of the fast casual. We'll never get into the candlelight and rosebud kind of fine dining.
Sure.
We won't really ever be in the steakhouse place. But anything where you're sort of having a sort of less than $12 average meal, we'll be there.
Got it. And are you expanding Uwink as well, or are those really just proof of concept stores?
They're really proof of concept. They're people that are so much better at running restaurants than we are. And so what we really want to be able to do is create really, really good software and make sure it works in our restaurants and then roll it out to the world.
Got it. That makes complete sense. And funnily enough, Uwink Mountain View is almost across the street from NeoEdge Networks. How did that happen?
Well, it turns out that I was early for a board meeting, and I thought, you know, this would be a good place for a Uwink, and just went up and down the street and asked every restaurant whether it was for sale, and one of them was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that used to be a kind of a pool hall.
It was kind of a
burger joint.
Steakhouse. It was called California Steakhouse, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, NeoEdge. Now, the one big deal that I know you've done at NeoEdge, you create casual games, and Yahoo, a lot of their casual games are the NeoEdge games, right?
Correct.
Is that your biggest deal so far?
Yes, it is. And but we also are selling advertising along with it, so we've done a couple of pretty good size on that. But I think the Yahoo thing sort of put us on the map as something to be taken seriously. And, of course, we've got a deal going with Microsoft, too.
I know that at the iMedia Breakthrough event, you're keynoting about new places to put advertising. And I didn't know you had the campus company, and you've really been you've been focused on understanding the ad revenue world since you were in college. What is it that's new about NeoEdge and the way ads are done in that environment?
It's through the new old, there are a lot of ways that you can put a game or advertising into a game. You know, I mean, and billboards as you drive by in your virtual car and things like that for a long time. But what we feel is that the standard stock and trade, I mean, almost every company that has a serious advertising budget has a 30-second spot. And so what we've done is we've been able to create this wrapper technology so that the programmer of the game doesn't need to even know we exist. And all of a sudden we can put a 30-second spot before the game, in interstitially during the game, between round one and round two. We can put our games really around our ads really around a game in some very, very important and interesting ways, so that it's really cheap. I mean, these companies spend millions of dollars in getting these 30-second spots, and that's kind of what they expect to run. And it turns out that it's very effective because people are, you know, waiting for the next round to start. They're okay to have a little bit of a rest, and boom, we hit them with a really highly qualified ad, and it works.
I've heard that casual gaming is the number three online activity after email and web surfing. Have you seen social media start to encroach on that, or is online gaming so far out ahead still?
Yeah, it's so far out ahead, and actually the amount of distance between is actually increasing. People are funny. Once they get into casual games and a type of game, it's really their drug of choice as far as relaxation. They just do more and more and more of it.
Like all the housewives that are hooked on Snood and never get the vacuuming done?
That's the one.
I know. I know from experience. One of the things that I want to talk to you about is one of those kind of, okay, Nolan, put on your long-term perspective hats. Here's my question. I was thinking about Pong taking off when other tennis games that maybe were even invented before it languished. I was thinking about how Google took off, even though there was Excite and Yahoo and Microsoft before them. Then actually Brad Behrens was the one who gave me the stimulus for this question. What is it when things go, even though others have done it beforehand? Have you any advice for us about that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's good and then there's good enough. And there's, you know, adequate. There's a lot of things that just don't reach the level of acceptability. And, you know, in terms of Pong, some people will say, well, Ralph Baer, who was the guy who started the Magnavox game, well, didn't he invent Pong? And because, you know, Ralph has said that several times. No, he didn't. He invented Odyssey, and Odyssey wasn't fun, and Pong was. And it's a they're both ping pong games, but one rose to the level of acceptability and the other one doesn't. And I can actually tell you the reason is the angle of bounce off the paddle is the difference between it being a good game and not a game at all. And without that little characteristic, you don't have a fun game in Pong. And I can show you by flipping a switch, because one of the guys did a version of Pong for our units, and he put in angle incidence, angle reflection, and the game isn't fun. It's really funny. I hadn't realized how powerful that core concept was.
So there's something about the nuance of making it really good instead of just okay, that allows a second company in to take off like a rocket.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Alta Vista, and there were probably seven search
companies.
Sure,
WebCrawler.
WebCrawler,
yeah, right. Good old Excite, my alma mater. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I want to go to a break because when I come back, I want to, first of all, thank my sponsors because I get to have these conversations with you and we all get to listen to what you have to say because of them. So we're going to give them their due. And when we come back, I want to talk a bit about entrepreneurs. You are one heck of an entrepreneur, Nolan, starting over 20 companies in the last, 40 odd years. So let's do that. And when we come back, we'll talk about it.
Great. I love that.
Good. All right. We're with Nolan Bushnell. He's founder of Atari and Chuck E. Cheese, currently working with U-Wink and NeoEdge Networks. And he'll be speaking at the iMedia conference coming up called Breakthrough. And we're going to go to a break and thank our sponsors. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Hey, this is Sean Daly, host of Green Talk Radio. Green Talk helps you navigate the maze of green and eco products on the market today and make smarter lifestyle choices at home and at work through informative and entertaining interviews with industry authors and experts, as well as executives from innovative companies around the world. Find Green Talk Radio on iTunes or at personallifemedia.com. Green Talk Radio, environmental stewardship through smart consumption. Green Talk Radio.
All right, we're back with Nolan Bushnell. So, Nolan, here's something interesting that I heard. You know, the number could be right or wrong, but it's probably darn close. I heard Chet Holmes told me that 94% of all companies who get started never even get to $1 million in revenue. And, you know, like 95% of those never even make it. What is it? You've launched 20 companies. You had some bombs, I'm sure. Is there anything that you can tell us that determines what is one of those companies that's going to break the million and then the 10 million barrier?
Well, I think that a lot of people think that entrepreneurship is about that big idea hitting you on the head when you're in the shower. And I look at it as it's really a process that takes an awful lot of work. And the more work you do beforehand, really going through all the issues, and really understanding not just the product, but the marketing channels and various things, that you have a much higher probability of success. A lot of businesses are started and are not really pursued in a serious way. I mean, a lot of the companies that fit into those statistics are companies that are formed but are never really get venture funded because they are not serious about it sufficiently. They think they're serious about it, but they're really not. And I just think you need to really, really do your homework. And if you do your homework, you can change your odds. I mean, of the 20 companies, I consider that all of them, with the exception of four, I was able to sell at a profit. Some of them were big profits, some of them were smaller profits, but the four that didn't make it, I knew pretty quickly into their life that they that there was something not quite right about the concept.
A lot of times, companies start and they do their homework and they get into a business and they realize that that business model's not working and they're a couple years in and they're thinking, okay, we need to try something new and we have an idea. What's the chance of success for a company like that, or the advice you would give a company that says, hey, we've got to respond to the market, or you know, the landscape has changed, or our idea wasn't good, we're going to do something new? What do you have to say about that?
I think that that's very, very typical. I think that I don't think there's any company that I've ever formed that has turned out to be exactly the way I thought it was going to be. Wasn't it Sun Tzu that said no battle plan succeeds with engagement, you know, upon engagement with the enemy? You know, it's a rough and tumble world out there, and I think you need to be somewhat flexible. You can't be too flexible because times are going to get tough in the most successful companies. I mean, we had one summer, we call it the summer of despair at Atari, where it just seemed like everything was going wrong, and we almost went bankrupt. And yet, the, you know, 2020 hindsight, the business was sound, that sort of thing, but we made some mistakes. And so so I encourage people to modify, morph, be flexible, respond to the marketplace, respond to the conditions. I mean, right now, if you had a business that required large amounts of debt, you probably need to rethink your business plan, because large amounts of debt the way it was for the previous 2 or 3 years. It's just not going to happen in today's marketplace. So you have to change your strategy if that was one of your premises.
I'm interviewing Sir Ken Robinson coming up shortly, and I've had him on the show before. He's an amazing man, and he just wrote a book. He's a creativity and productivity, or creativity and education expert, and he just wrote a book called The Element. And his premise is that you need to figure out where the intersection of your passion and your talents lie to be truly successful. I have also had Marcus Buckingham on Dishy Mix, and he wrote a book called The Truth About You, which is about how to discover, there's an actual process for discovering what it is that you do that is uniquely your feature set, if you will, that puts you in that zone of being just amazing. So they're both two amazing men who are coming at this thing of finding out what that thing is that's really amazing about you. What's yours?
That's really hard. I mean, for me, a business plan or a business idea is kind of like that chipped tooth that you keep investigating with your thumb or with your tongue.
Yeah.
And with me, when I all of a sudden sort of see something, a market need or a technology that needs to be pushed in a certain direction, I kind of worry it for a while. And then I find myself going through the economics and trying to figure out what it's going to cost. And then I start putting things down on paper, and before long, I've done a spreadsheet for the first year of operation. And it sits there for a while and kind of, you know, ferments or ripens or ferments, you know, maybe it rots a little bit, I'm not sure. And I come back and I look at it and modify it and fix it and see some logical problems that I did. And before I know, I've got it started, and I've started putting people around it and money, and the company is launched. And it's kind of, you know, it's not all at once. Like, I've decided that I would never have an idea and launch it the next day. I think it takes this fermentation and this research phase to do a company correctly.
Are you the kind of a guy that throws off tons of ideas and then you just have to kind of pick them? Or is it this thing where you get something in your craw and you just need to germinate it?
No, I get a lot of ideas. And at any point in time, I probably have 5 or 6 business plans that are in some level of fermentation.
I'm thinking about you with these funny little kimchi jars all around you as you're sitting at your desk and you're fermenting all these ideas.
It's actually pretty true.
When you're assembling a team, are there any particular attributes that you look for in the people that you put into a team? Are there, like, I've got to have these 3 kinds of skills? Obviously, the technical skills need to be there, sure. But I'm talking about a little, like, more interpersonal or talent kinds of things.
Well, I think the number one thing is character. You know, I really want people who are honest and you know, have this sense of duty and obligation, but at the same time with whimsy. But you know, there are sort of people who believe in value received for value given, and then there's a whole set of people who believe I'm going to get what I can and give back as little as possible. And to the very extent I can, the people who really kind of want or expect a free ride, I don't even want to take time to spend with those people. My wife likes to say, oh, there's one of those people that thinks that if they carry your briefcase, they'll get rich.
So and, character.
You got to stay away from those people.
Yeah. And what do you do to ferret that out? How do you tell who has character? Unless you've gone through some bad times with people, often it's very hard to tell whether they have character or not. What are your indicators?
Well, the first step, when we talk about a senior management position, I would never hire someone if I didn't take them out to dinner with their wife, if they're married, and either my daughter or my wife. Women are much better they've got much better bullshit detectors than men do. And I've recognized that that my wife or my daughter have much better sense of frauds and flakes, and so I use them, and they're very, very ready to let me know when somebody that I'm dealing with is a phony.
You leverage their intuition to determine
exactly
someone's character. Also, certainly who you marry is definitely a reflection on who you are. Have you read that book, The 4-Hour Work Week? Or do you know about it? Have you heard about it?
I've heard about it, and I think I've read an excerpt, but I haven't read the book.
You know, it's supposed to be this idea that the new rich escape the 9-to-5, they can live anywhere, and they just run their businesses on the internet, and everything happens while they're having pina coladas on the beach. What do you think? I call that business porn, by the way, Nolan. That's my word for that book. But I actually keep this book on my desk to motivate myself. Like, there's a possibility that I could have a 4-hour work week, because as an entrepreneur, you know what my work weeks are like. What
right
do you think about the idea of the 4-hour work week? You think it's possible? Would you want one?
I do think it's possible. It's in fact, I know a couple of people that have those kinds of things. They're not quite 4-hour work weeks, but they would be more about integrating their passion and their love with their work. But they have a very, very nice lifestyle, and they spend a lot of time traveling, and they don't have large organizations, and they're making very, very significant amounts of money. So I think it's possible. I think that any business, unless you have some monopoly component to it, and those are really, really hard, that if you're a guy who is only spending 4 hours and you're vulnerable to a competitor that will come in and spend a 40-hour or an 80-hour work week. So I think that it happens, but only in pieces, and it's not sustainable.
Yeah. Well, and so if you're in one, enjoy it while it lasts, right? Hey,
exactly.
We only have a couple minutes left, and I was wondering if you would do, like, I know you're a game guy. Will you go in a lightning round with me?
Please.
Okay, so what I thought would be fun is if I ask you a question and you just answer it with the first thing that pops into your head, and I'll ask you maybe like 10 questions all in a row, and they'll just be fun ones. Does that sound good?
Let's do it.
Okay. If you were going to invest $10 million of your own personal cash and your children's inheritance, and there's a lot of them, did you have 8 children?
Correct.
8 children. So, you know, they're not going to want you to squander this. $10 million of your own money to invest in any social media company. Which one would you choose?
Oh, probably Facebook, but it really depends on what the price is.
That's spoken like a good businessman. That was not an emotional decision, huh?
Right.
Facebook, any particular reason why?
I think that it has the right sauce in terms of the fun, and it's not too weird. You know, I kind of wished I didn't have so many friends.
Oh.
Isn't that a bad? That's a bad thing, because I realize in going through my Facebook page, there's a lot of people that I don't really care that much about what they're doing, and so I say, why do I have them on my Facebook? Oh well.
Oh well, Nolan, you can remove them, and they won't know.
Really?
Yeah, you just go into your friends list, and there's a little X next to each name, and you can X it and remove them from your friends list, and they don't get notified.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so you can actually thin it down to you can do some weeding. Now, I'm expecting you to accept my friend request, though. So you don't remove me, because I'm going to know. I'm going to watch.
I wouldn't think about it.
All right. Here's another one. What is the axiom by which you've lived your life?
Existentialism. You know, the journey is the reward. Make every day interesting.
Nice. What do you think is your greatest achievement?
My 8 kids.
Yeah. Who's the wisest person you've ever met?
Bob Noyce, who was one of the founders of Intel.
What was it about him that was so wise?
Just kind of down-home, aw-shucks kind of philosophy. It was one of those things whenever we'd go out to dinner or lunch, I'd feel like I was a smarter person when I left the lunch.
Have you been to the Intel Computer Technology Museum at the main campus?
Yes,
at the Robert M. Noyce building. Yeah, that's a good computer museum named after Bob Noyce. Where do you draw your strength and inspiration?
This will sound very isolating, but I get a lot of inspiration from solitude. I have what all my kids call my cave, and it's a room that I've made out in the garage, and it's got all my stuff around it, and it's a combination of workshop and office and inventory and library, and I just feel like I can conquer the world from inside that cave.
I love it. It sounds like a really fun place. It sounds like a place my daughter would love to go, because there's got to be amazing stuff in there.
Well, there's a lot of stuff. My kids use it as a substitute for fries. They
right.
go into dad's office, and they can always find an extra mouse or an extra keyboard or some other various thing. I used to have full sets of tools. Now I don't, you know. So one of those problems of having kids.
Yeah, well, they need to build their time machines and stuff.
Exactly.
You lived at one point when you lived up here. I know you're down in L.A. now, but you lived in Woodside at the Folgers Mansion.
Right.
What was that like, living in that Folgers coffee guy's mansion? Was it Tudor style, kind of a big thing like that?
Well, it's more Edwardian, but, mm-hmm. you know, it was on 16 acres, sort of in the middle of a park, and it's a good life. You know, it's good being really rich. I think the kids all loved that environment. It was a fun house. We had a Dungeons and Dragons cellar, and we had a game room up on the fifth floor. It's a lot of houses don't have the fifth floor, and a theater and all that stuff. It was really fun having it. We live more modestly now, but it's still fun. I mean, I'm really convinced that it's not your surrounding, that's sort of how you structure your life that gives you the happiness.
Absolutely. I noticed that, and this could be wrong, I read it in Wikipedia or something, but you had a yacht or have a yacht named Charlie, and you named your company Chuck E. Cheese. So who's Charles? Is it your father?
My dad was known as Charlie.
Charlie.
That was his nickname.
And you named your boat, and did you name Chuck E. Cheese after your dad too?
Actually not. But the ad agency named Chuck E. Cheese. I told them I wanted a name that would make everyone smile whenever they said it. And so they came back with Chuck E. Cheese, which gave you sort of three smile events. And I really liked it. And that's how Chuck E. was named.
All right. Just a couple of other quick questions. This is fun. I like this part. For what do you want to be remembered?
As being a creative person that has done some interesting things, I'm always focusing on my next few projects. And so I always figure there's going to be one more that's going to be bigger than anything I've done.
Yeah, that your greatest achievement is ahead of you then.
I think so.
Uh-huh. If you hadn't been an entrepreneur in the technology world, in the cross between fun and technology, what other profession might you have done?
I've always wanted to be a stand-up comic.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you funny?
I can be. And, I've actually written a few riffs, and I've had so many weird experiences that in my life that I think I can stand up and riff on some of those, because some of them are really, really amusing. And from the point of view of a businessman and a rich person as opposed to a struggling artist, I think I'd probably have some interesting new kinds of wit.
Yes, all of the sadness that you can laugh at about your own career and all the crazy and ridiculous things that have happened, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure raising 8 children, there's possibly a few things there too.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, there you go. I don't know. It might be open mic night at U-Wink in Mountain View one of these days.
I'm definitely going to do it. It's on what I call, it's on my bucket list.
Yeah, that was a good movie, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
And I actually think it's good. I hadn't realized it, but I'd sort of had bucket lists at various times. You know, I'm going to do this before I turn 30. I'm going to do these sorts of things before I turn 40. And I think it's good to have those kind of goals and aspirations.
Well, it's probably one of the reasons that you're so accomplished. Well, this is my last question on the lightning round, and then we have to let our listeners go and live their lives. So my last question for you, Nolan, is what advice can you give the people who are listening to you right now, they are in the midst of building their careers. They're trying to weather this economy. They're in this kind of new digital media space. What do you want to tell them?
Maintain optimism. Everything is fixable. And if you find yourself depressed, just exercise. I'm a big believer that we are nothing more than chemical engines, that we respond to our environment, and that you can fix anything about you by the proper application of the right kind of food and the right kind of exercise. And then think positive thoughts, and you can really master yourself in a very, very fundamental way.
I love it. Well, and I think a lot of people are focused on taking care of themselves more so than they ever have been. But that being said, probably everyone still feels like they're grinding it out. So that's
exactly. Good
advice. Nolan, thank you so much for coming on Dishy Mix. I enjoyed getting to know you better. I've been such a fan for so many years, and it was just such a delightful opportunity for me to have you as a part of the show and introduce my listeners to you.
Well, thank you, and fun being here.
Good. All right. I am your host, Susan Bratton. I hope you have a great day, and I will see you next week.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.